Chapter 6. The morning came all too soon. Sabrina woke her sister and they dressed sleepily. They agreed it was best to keep the missing book a secret. They were pretty sure it had to be somewhere in the castle or its grounds, and it would be easier to find it themselves than start an uproar that would lead to a lot of questions about what the book was used for. They divided up the camp so that each of them would have a different section, then stepped out into the bright sunshine. Before they took a single step, Snow White was marching toward them.
"Are you ready for your training?"
"Huh?"
"Billy thinks it might be wise, in light of the prophecy, that you learn to fight. He also thinks it might be good for everyone to see the two of you out here at the crack of dawn preparing for war. Who better to train you than me? Remember the self-defense class I taught at the community center?"
Sabrina shrugged and turned to her sister, who was still barely awake. Daphne grumbled,
"Without breakfast?"
"We can eat during our first break," Snow said. "First break implies that there will be more than one, which also implies there will be time between the breaks when we are not breaking," Sabrina said.
"Don't be lazy, girls," Snow said, as she handed each girl a long black pole, nearly 4 feet in length. They were polished and smooth and heavy.
"What's this?"
"It's called a bow staff, and it's very useful in a fight," Snow said.
"It weighs a ton," Sabrina said, trying to swing it over her head, only to drop it on the ground.
"And it's clumsy."
"That's because your muscles are weak. When you grow stronger, your ability to use it will grow too," Snow said. "Trust me, when I started learning martial arts, I had the upper body strength of a tadpole. But now..."
Snow spun the staff at an incredible speed, twirling it around her head like the blades on a helicopter. She passed it from hand to hand, still spinning, then swung it around her back, along her arms as she ducked into a crouch. She stopped her last swing with the staff only inches from Sabrina's nose.
"I think that's what your sister would call very punk rock."
"My catchphrases are trademarked, Ms. White," Daphne said with a giggle.
"You're going to teach us to do that?" Sabrina asked.
"I am."
"How is this going to help me stop a madman who is made out of magic?" Sabrina said.
"Listen, Ms. White, I appreciate the help, but you've already taught my sister and me plenty of self-defense stuff. I don't need to know how to scare someone off with a big stick."
"I'm not here to teach you to scare someone with a big stick," Snow said, stepping forward. "I'm going to teach you how to hit someone with it. Welcome to the Bad Apples."
That afternoon was the most painful in Sabrina's memory. Though Snow took it easy on her, the staff still slapped against her shoulders, knees, shins, and fingers. It was also heavy and hard to hold. So after a few hours, her shoulders were burning like hamburgers on a grill. But what hurt most was how each strike her pole blocked sent a jarring vibration into her hands and up her arms, stopping at her neck. When one attack came, it hurt so much the staff fell out of her hands and bounced on the ground. As she bent down to retrieve her weapon, she saw that she had an audience. Nearly everyone within the walls of the castle had slipped into the courtyard to watch. Some were smiling at her, almost beaming with pride. Others were merely curious and watched without expression. Pinocchio was smirking at her, but this didn't bother her as much as her mother's and father's anxious expressions. She tried to push their worry out of her mind and focus on her training. If she learned anything that day, it was that Snow knew when you weren't paying attention, and she made you pay for it.
"Well, that was a good first day," Snow said, taking the bow staffs. "I'll see you back here at 5.
Sabrina groaned.
5?
But Snow walked away.
"We still need to find the book," Daphne said.
"I need to be taken to a hospital," Sabrina said, wincing at her bruises and strained muscles.
Suddenly, Puck stepped forward with 3 wooden swords in hand.
"What's this about?" Daphne asked.
"I'm your next teacher. You can call me Mr. Puck," he said,
handing the sisters each a sword.
I'm going to teach you the art of swordsmanship. Or, in other words, how to totally kill someone with a sharp, pointy thing.
Sabrina's arms were so sore, she could barely lift the weapon. Daphne was struggling as well.
We're too tired, Sabrina said. And too beat up, Daphne added.
Puck didn't listen. He launched into an attack, and the girls were forced to defend themselves. For 10 minutes, Sabrina managed to fight him off, but not before he used his wooden sword to smack her in her head, poke her in the belly, and crack her across the shins. It didn't help that the sword, though wooden, felt as if it were cast from iron and attached to barbells. Snow's workout had taken nearly all of her strength. She fell to her knees and surrendered.
Get up, Puck said, as he stood over her.
Puck, we're tired,
Daphne cried. Get on your feet, he demanded.
What are you doing?
Sabrina said, as she tried to fill her exhausted lungs. She was surprised by his attitude. She had never seen him so serious, so mean. Where was the dancing boy from the night before? Where was the Puck who she wanted to kiss?
I'm teaching you to fight, he said. Pick up your sword!
She stared up into his eyes, hoping he could see her hurt, but they were cold. Sabrina looked to the crowd. They looked back at her like she was a turtle who had flipped over on its back and could not right itself. She could hardly blame them. She wouldn't want her own life put in the hands of children, especially ones as abysmally normal as Daphne and her. She wanted to stomp over to them and shout that she had not chosen this path for herself. She wanted them to know that she wasn't any happier about it than they were. She wanted to scream that it wasn't fair.
You have this camp's attention, Puck said. They need to see that you can be pushed and fight back. They want to see that when things get hard, you aren't going to lie on the ground and whine. You failed them today.
Puck stormed off.
The party and the dancing are over, Grimms. It's time to get serious.
Who is he to talk about getting serious?
Daphne grumbled as the girls watched him walk away. Henry and Veronica approached. They helped Sabrina to her feet.
Girls, this isn't working, Henry sighed. We don't have time to train you properly. We have to do something else.
Your father and I have an idea,
Veronica said. Sabrina asked Red to spread the word that she and her sister wanted to speak to the army, and soon everyone returned to the yard. She stood before them all, painfully nervous. She had no idea how her parents' idea would be received, and she wasn't sure she would do a good job convincing everyone to give it a try. But she was relieved that someone, anyone, was taking charge.
I hope everyone had a good time last night, she said to the crowd. But now we have to get back to our plans of stopping Mirror. We're a small group, too small to be much of a problem for him. I think I know how to change that. But before I explain, I asked the widow to fly down to the town and report back on what she saw.
The widow flapped up onto Mr. Canis's shoulder.
It's a horror show. I can't put it any prettier than that. If you owned a business down there, you might want to go ahead and fill out that insurance claim. The streets are a disaster, almost unrecognizable, and it's overrun with the Hand, who are using it as their own personal playground. I saw two trolls tossing cars around like they were in a snowball fight. There are tons of Everafters looting and destroying things just for the fun of it. All of them have that creepy red hand painted on their chests. And then there's Relda. I mean, Mirror. He, she. Wow, this is confusing. Let's just say the bad guy is camped out in the old police station, and she looks worse than I've ever seen her. He's got members of the Hand running in and out of the place. He's ordering everyone to cause as much chaos as possible. Plus, there's this red-haired lunatic who seems to be Mirror's right-hand man.
Red-haired lunatic? Charming asked. Is this someone new?
I've never seen him before, but he's got a sword as big as a boat oar.
Sabrina cringed. The red-haired man had to be Atticus. She looked to the wicked queen, who was cringing as well. Apparently the witch had not yet told her daughter or her daughter's boyfriend anything about their past, or the wicked man who haunted it. Bunny exchanged a knowing look with Sabrina, then cast her eyes to the ground. Sabrina turned to Morgan, and then Baba Yaga, who hovered at the back of the crowd. Neither one of them were going to say anything either. The bonds of the coven were deep.
"How many members of the Hand do you think you saw, Widow?" Sabrina asked.
"Probably close to 2,000.
2,000? The Pied Piper cried. "We'll be slaughtered," Beauty said.
The crowd broke into panicked chatter. Sabrina was sure she had lost them, but she continued, urged on by her parents' confident smiles.
"It does sound like a lot. That's why they're going to be super surprised when we beat them. And that's where my idea comes into play. It couldn't hurt to have a few more people on our side."
"And how do you propose we do that?"
Buzzflower demanded.
"We're going to ask them to join us," Sabrina said.
"That's insane. The Hand is full of murderous lunatics," Nurse Spratt said.
Henry waved the argument away like a pesky fly and then stepped over to his daughter.
"Yes, that's true. But it's also full of people who are afraid, desperate, and manipulated. I believe that many of the Hand are just people who turned to the Master for the sake of survival. They don't see an alternative. We can provide them a way out. We can take them in, protect them, and in turn they'll join our fight. I believe most will jump at the chance."
"That's a very big risk," Goldie said.
Henry nudged his daughter, and she continued her speech.
"We're going to give them a big dose of the truth. The Master lied to them. He told them they would take over the world together, but once he got his chance, he turned his back on them and tried to escape the town alone. I'm betting they don't know that, and I think the news will make them pretty angry."
"I don't think you can get them to listen to reason," Swinehart said.
"That's where my mother comes in. My mom can make anyone listen," Sabrina said. "She managed to win the peace with King Oberon and Queen Titania back in the city, and those two were impossible. If there is anyone who can convince members of the Hand that they should join us, it's her."
"Except one thing," Beauty said.
"There are ever-afters in the Hand that despise your family. More than a few would like to see you dead. Most won't even consider what your mother says just because she's a Grimm."
"We won't win them all," Veronica said. "But we could win enough to make a difference. And maybe, once they see the rest of their crowd turning away from evil, the real diehards will realize their cause is hopeless."
"It's worth a try," Geppetto said. "It might save a few lives."
"And it might get us a proper army," Mr. Canis said.
Beauty stepped forward.
"I'm in. I got wrapped up in the Hand's plans myself once. I didn't see another choice, but if someone had given me some hope, well, I'm sure I would have seized it. Besides, my husband and daughter are amongst those people, and I'm not ready to give up on them."
Morgan Le Fay nodded.
"Glinda of Oz was one of my best friends when we worked for the mayor's office. I know she doesn't want this fight."
"Then it's settled," Henry said. "I think it's wise if we call for a meeting in the town square." The crowd gasped.
"Didn't you just say the town square is a war zone?" Pinocchio said. "Are you intentionally trying to get us killed? Are you going to suggest we paint targets on our backs, too?"
"Hush up, boy," Geppetto demanded. "We aren't going in unprepared," Henry said. "The Pied Piper will be on crowd control. Baba Yaga, Bunny, Mordred, and Morgan can handle magical attacks, and Buzzflower and Mallowbarb can create diversions if we need to escape."
"It's a bold idea. I like it," Charming said. "There are a few people in their crowd we can count on, too. Robin Hood and his men, as well as King Arthur and his knights, have infiltrated the Hand and sent me information about their movements.
When the time is right, they will fight for us. But my hopes are it will go well. I'd hate for them to be exposed as spies.
All those in favor?
Snow asked. Sabrina glanced at the crowd. Every hand was raised except Pinocchio's, and, much to her surprise, Puck's. He was standing in the back of the crowd, arms crossed, and looking at her disapprovingly. Was he still angry about the sword fighting?
Then it's settled, Canis said. We should send word immediately that...
I'll have no part in your truce,
a voice said from the back of the crowd. Sabrina craned her neck and spotted her uncle.
You cannot trust one of them, not one, he barked. You will reach for their hands in friendship, and they will stab you dead.
This plan is a perfect opportunity for them to find this castle and overrun it. I will not help you.
Jake, they aren't all like Hart and Nottingham, Veronica said.
Yes, they are, he shouted angrily. Charming, this is your castle, but it's also Briar's grave, and I will kill any member of the Hand that lays one toe in this camp.
Jake, Henry said.
I mean it. Not one step through those gates.
He stormed away. Sabrina was worried how Jake's outburst would affect the crowd, but it didn't seem to change their minds. The crow was sent out to deliver the message. Tomorrow, at noon, the Scarlet Hand would be getting a visit from Sabrina Grimm's army. Much to the girls' surprise, when they returned to their cabin for the night, Daphne found the Book of Ever After under the bed.
You had me stressed out about nothing, Sabrina said. I swear it wasn't under there this morning,
Daphne said, hoisting the book up and eyeing it as if it were responsible for its own disappearance. Sabrina crawled into bed and pulled the covers over her head. She was too tired for mysteries, especially mysteries that weren't mysteries at all. I think the only thing missing is a pair of glasses on your nose. She fell asleep without hearing Daphne's reply. It had been a long day. Sabrina woke up late at night to the sound of arguing. She sat up in bed and strained her ears. She recognized the voices ringing through the yard. Her father and her uncle were in the midst of a terrible fight. Sabrina's curiosity got the best of her. She crept to the site of Briar's grave, where she knew they'd be. She hid behind a stack of chopped wood so she could listen without being seen.
Jake, this is as good a plan as any, her father said. You can't stand in the way. The girls' lives are in jeopardy.
And whose fault is that? Jake said. Sending them into that hornet's nest tomorrow is as good as aiming the arrows right at them.
Not everyone in the Scarlet Hand is bad, Henry said. It's not fair to paint them all with the same brush. I know you're hurting, and I know you're angry. I would be too, but you are slipping off the deep end, Jake. This is not what Briar would want for you.
Don't tell me what Briar would have wanted for me, Jake shouted. You have to find a way to get a hold of this anger.
Oh, trust me. I have a plan to deal with my anger.
There was a long silence. What you're planning could blow up in your face, Henry said. It could make things worse.
How could things get worse?
If you kill Nottingham and Hart right now, you will destroy any chance of the Hand turning against the Master. They already can't trust us, and now you're going to be a murderer. It will be like throwing a match on a stack of dynamite. People will get hurt. Jake, my wife and kids will be in the line of fire, Henry said.
Consider yourself warned, Uncle Jake said dismissively.
And that's when Henry punched his brother. Jake fell to the ground and lay there in the dust. Sabrina gasped and hoped neither of them could hear. She had never seen her father so fierce and confrontational. So many people had told her that her dad was an impulsive and emotional kid, but she had never witnessed it. Here, before her eyes, was the Henry Grimm of so many stories.
"Since when do you talk with your fists, Henry?"
Uncle Jake said. "My girls adore you, and you would put their lives in danger for your stupid revenge? Well, I won't let it happen, Jake.
I will not let them be hurt just because you are heartbroken. I'm sorry she's gone, Jake. We're all sorry. And you have a right to want revenge. But you don't have a right to have it. And if you try, I will hit you again. Stand up and find out if I don't mean it. Henry threatened.
I'm fine where I am, Jake said.
What's going on?
Goldie said as she rushed forward. Somehow she had not seen Sabrina.
We're fine, Henry said as he calmed himself. He extended a hand, but Jake refused the offer.
You weren't there, Hank. They sent a dragon after her, and it swatted her away like she was nothing. You didn't hear the sound. You didn't see her eyes.
Henry sighed and kneeled next to his brother.
I had a ring, Hank, Jake continued.
Goldie knelt down beside them, but Sabrina's father shook her off.
Goldie, this is family business. You should go.
Goldie looked surprised.
But
the three of us were a long time ago, he barked. Goldie fought her tears and rushed toward her cabin. When she was gone, Henry turned back to his brother.
Jake, I have a lot on my plate. My son doesn't know me. My girls are on the front line. Our mother is in big trouble. Our family needs to stick together. When all this is over, we can talk about Nottingham and Hart. We'll get justice for Briar.
Jake got to his feet.
There is no justice until those two are in the ground.
Grimms don't murder people, Jake frowned.
Grimms don't murder people, Henry repeated.
Henry tried to hug his brother, but Jake shook him off. He sank back into his chair and looked out over Briar's grave. Henry watched him for a long moment, until finally heading back toward his own cabin. Sabrina kept watching her uncle. He leaped from his chair, furious and raging, and punched the castle wall, splitting his knuckles so that blood dripped down his arm. He stared at the wound for a long time, as if it might hold some answers, but then he slumped against the wall and slid down to the ground. He buried his head in his hands and wept with abandon. Sabrina wanted to reach out to him, to find a way to take his heartbreak away, but she also knew that her uncle needed to cry. She slinked back to her cabin, where her sister and Elvis were sound asleep. She sat on the edge of the bed and cried for Jake.
October 18th. Uncle Jake is gone again. Red said she saw him walk across the drawbridge and into the woods. He had his bow and a quill full of arrows strapped to his back, and his pockets were full of daggers. Apparently, his argument with Dad did not change his mind. He's determined to have his revenge. Dad and Canis want to go after him, but Charming convinced them to give it up. He says Uncle Jake is on his own path now, and we would only be delaying the inevitable. It's a problem we didn't need today. There are a million things to worry about. We're walking into an angry mob that wants everyone in my family dead. Even though it would ruin the plan, I'm kind of hoping that no one bothers to show up for the meeting. I would breathe a big sigh of relief if we found ourselves alone in the middle of the town square. On a side note, Puck, who was bordering on being sweet just 2 days ago, has turned into a sour sack of socks. He's not speaking to me or Daphne. If I wasn't so tired, I'd sit on his chest and demand an explanation. Boys are moody and stupid.
If someone were to ask Sabrina to list her virtues, patience would not be one of them. Waiting made her grouchy. She remembered one Christmas in particular. While waiting to sit on Santa's lap, she took a gander at the long line of kids in front of her. She was sure their lists were filled with silly wastes of time, but hers was something Saint Nick would want to get started on right away. So she had to act. When her father's grip on her hand loosened for a moment, she darted to the front of the line, stiff-armed an elf, and hopped into Santa's lap. She shoved her wish list into his white-gloved hand just before security guards yanked her away. Her parents were horrified and dragged her from the store.
But Sabrina didn't care. Such an important list couldn't wait. So waiting for the widow to return was painful. What made it worse was that there was no one to talk to. Her mother and father were too busy writing Veronica's speech for the Scarlet Hand, and her sister was giving Elvis a much-needed bath, though it looked more like Elvis was giving the little girl a bath. To take her mind off the wait, Sabrina tried to busy herself with chores. She collected her family's dirty clothes and scrubbed them in a bucket of water. There wasn't any detergent available, but she hoped the socks, jeans, and T-shirts might lose some of their peculiar funk if she drowned them a few times. After she hung them up to dry, she offered to help Pinocchio build a compost pile his father insisted he finish. But 10 minutes later, his constant whining and declarations that he was too smart for menial labor forced her to leave him to his task. She took Basil beneath a shade tree, and the two counted the rusty orange-colored leaves left in the skinny branches. She fed the horses, then fed the chickens. She watched Borman milk a cow. She helped Mallowbarb and Buzzflower hang a tapestry, then wandered through the castle to explore the rooms, which would hopefully be living spaces for the new soldiers. None of her efforts distracted her for long. Eventually, she threw up her hands and marched off to see the magic mirrors. Maybe they had some news. She found them all waiting in their frames when she entered. Reggie, Titan, Fanny, Donovan, and Harry were all smiling, but the rest eyed her warily.
"How was the wedding?" Fanny asked. "What did the bride wear?"
"Was there any dancing?" Donovan said. "I was hoping someone would ask me to play some records. I have the most extensive collection of disco and funk in the known universe. Half of my collection is from bands that are purely imaginary."
"Who caught the bouquet?"
Titan roared.
"Everything was lovely," Sabrina said. "It was like a fairy tale. But it's all over now, and drama has returned to Castle Charming." She explained her family's plan, what her mother would do, and what they hoped to gain.
"So it sounds like they're finally taking you seriously,"
Reggie said. Sabrina nodded, but she wasn't sure. It seemed that ever since the mirrors had made their prophecy, everyone was bossing the girls around more. She had offered her parents a few ideas about the speech earlier that afternoon, but they had all been dismissed. At the time, she was okay letting her mom and dad make all the plans. After all, what did she know about any of this? But now, with the mirrors reminding her of her earlier complaints, she felt a little silly.
"I guess they are."
"So, what can we do for you?" Harry asked.
"This meeting is scary. Everyone I know might die, including me. I think I need a reminder of why I'm doing it. Can you show me, Granny?"
The mirror's reflections became milky vapors until they coalesced into a lone figure wearing a filthy white dress, Granny Rilda. Her long gray hair was a tangled briar, sticking out in all directions. Her eyes were smoldering black coals, and her face, once kind and amused, was convulsing with bloodthirsty rage. Sabrina watched the old woman with increasing horror. Granny's head cocked to the side, as if she were peering back at Sabrina, and then she laughed. It was a low, foul, otherworldly sound, filled with violence and frenzy.
"Stop!" Sabrina cried, tears in her eyes. "I can't see this!"
"We're sorry, honey,"
Franny said, as she and the other guardians returned. Titan roared fiercely.
"I hate to see you so, girl. I swear on my life that the first will pay for his crimes. We'll find a way to punish him and rescue your grandmother."
Sabrina prayed silently that Titan was right.
"Hey, the black chicken is back,"
Puck said. He had crept into the room without her knowing.
"She's a crow," Sabrina said, wiping the tears from her cheeks.
"Whatever,"
Puck said. For a moment, his face had softened as he watched her cry. But now it was angry and determined again. He stomped out of the room, shouting behind him.
It's time to go.
He's grouchy, Fanny said.
Sabrina sighed. Yeah, well, whatever's bothering him is going to have to wait until I get killed.
She said goodbye and hurried out to find the widow surrounded by a crowd, all eager to hear how their invitation had been received. As Sabrina drew closer, she saw there were several unfamiliar birds with the crow.
I invited everyone I could find that didn't try to kill me, which wasn't too many,
the exhausted crow squawked to the gathered crowd.
And I managed to recruit a few along the way. Allow me to introduce to you our new aerial spy network. The silver pigeon, the gold pigeon, the clockwork owl, the canary. The duck here is named Lenchen, and the big one with all the plumes is a firebird. Don't know his name yet, but the others say he is reliable.
The firebirds squawked in agreement.
Did you see my husband and daughter? Did you invite them?
Beauty asked. The widow nodded her tiny head and hopped from the ground onto a tree stump.
I did. Now, whether they come or not is anyone's guess. I told Beast not to bring any weapons. Then he fired a crossbow at me. Real special guy you got there, Beauty.
He's not really a bad person. He's just caught up with the wrong people,
Beauty said.
Beast would be a great recruit, Charming said, as he handed a piece of paper to the Scarecrow. I've made a wish list of some ever-afters that would be very useful. The Ice Queen, the Frog Prince, Glinda, the Spider, and Big Hans are just a few. If any one of them shows a hint of coming our way, we need to help make it happen.
We better get started if we want to make it to the town square on time,
Goldilocks said. The previous night's encounter with Henry still seemed to be bothering her. She seemed self-conscious and wouldn't look directly at Sabrina's father. Mr. Canis agreed.
We should get there early. I don't want to walk through a hostile crowd.
Veronica planted a kiss on Basil's face and turned to give him to Red, who happily agreed to stay behind and look after him.
Be good, little man.
Give your mommy a hug and say bye-bye,
Red told the toddler. Basil turned and looked up at Veronica apprehensively. Then he wrapped his arms around her leg.
Bye-bye,
he said. Veronica glowed like she had a string of Christmas lights inside of her. The group filed out into the woods for what Charming predicted would be a good 2-hour hike. Unfortunately, the ground was a soupy mess from all the rain they'd been getting, and it slowed them down considerably. Someone suggested they all step into Baba Yaga's house for an easier trip, but only Puck thought that was a good idea. It was also unusually chilly, made even colder by the sun-blocking trees. Still, the army marched onward. Mr. Canis hobbled forward to walk alongside the Grimms.
I don't like this plan, he growled. We'll be out in the open and vulnerable to all those thugs.
We've got some of the most powerful witches and fairies in town on our side, Mr. Canis, Sabrina said, as well as the Hamlins and Beauty. Plus, for brute strength, we've got the 3 bears, and Charming is no slouch.
I can deliver a pretty mean kick to the shins, too, Daphne bragged.
I think you're all entirely too overconfident, Canis growled.
Don't worry, we've got Puck, who has a variety of, unique talents,
Sabrina said. Puck stomped forward, interrupting the conversation.
Exactly what am I supposed to do?
You're keeping an eye on the girls, Henry explained. Puck groaned.
I have been in the middle of 100 wars, many of which I started myself. Why waste my sword on your rugrats? Can't we just lock them in a playpen until it's over?
A playpen? Sabrina said.
Yeah, like babies, Puck said.
Then he stomped to the back of the line.
He's moody, Morgan said.
I think it's something in the air,
Goldie grumbled. Finally, the group reached the edge of the downtown business district. The widow's description of the destruction of the town didn't do it justice. Street lamp poles had been uprooted and were leaning against trucks. Broken electrical wires popped and snapped on the ground like striking cobras. Huge slabs of concrete were completely missing from sidewalks and streets, and there was an overpowering smell of burning metal. Worse, as Mr. Canis had feared, the army was late for the meeting. A sea of the Scarlet Hand waited for them at the gazebo. Sabrina and the others had to walk through the hostile crowd to get to the stage. She fully expected a magical attack or the feeling of a blade in her back. Many of the attendees were notorious troublemakers. Beast was there with his daughter, Natalie, as was Mayor Hart, Sheriff Nottingham, Glinda, the three blind mice, Ms. Muffet and her husband, the spider, as well as their creepy spider boy, Toby, the white rabbit, and a large contingent of ogres, imps, trolls, goblins, orcs, leprechauns, and brownies. A beautiful but very pale woman in a long white dress stood out from the crowd. The ground beneath her was a sheet of ice. Worse still were the faces in the crowd that Granny Relda once called friends. Mowgli, Baloo, Jack Pumpkinhead, Tick-Tock, Ozma, Hansel and Gretel, Old King Cole, Little John, and Mother Hubbard, each with a bright red handprint painted on their chests. If there was a silver lining, it was that Mirror and Atticus were nowhere to be seen. Mayor Hart and Sheriff Nottingham roughly shoved their way to the front of the crowd. Nottingham wore black leather pants and a matching overcoat. Hart was in a ball gown decorated with hearts and lace. Her face was as white as her powder wig, which stood in stark contrast to her bold, garish makeup. Whoever told her that swamp green and bright red would look good on her face was not the Queen's friend.
"Say what you've come to say,"
Hart barked through her trusty electronic megaphone.
"Your bird said it was important, and it better be. If you waste our time, I can't guarantee this crowd will not rise up and attack you."
The crowd cheered and laughed. Many shook swords and knobby clubs in the air. Henry gave Veronica the thumbs up, and she stepped to the front of the stage, fully vulnerable to the crowd. Sabrina could feel the panic rising in her throat as she imagined the endless number of attacks that could strike her mother down. They had put themselves at the mercy of a group of villains that wanted to see them dead. What were they thinking?
"May I have your attention?" Veronica said.
The crowd ignored her, so she asked again with similar results. Finally, Hart blasted an angry,
"Pipe down!"
which quelled the crowd.
"Let her talk! It's the least we can do. She'll be dead by nightfall."
The crowd's second roar of approval infuriated Canis. He clenched his fists and looked ready to attack anyone who might approach. But the mob was not intimidated as they once might have been. For once, Sabrina missed the big bad wolf. Unfazed, her mother looked out on the crowd.
"Thank you for coming. I know that by standing here with us, you are putting yourselves at risk, so I won't waste your time. My name is Veronica Grimm. I am not known to many of you. My time in this town was short, but I developed a deep personal relationship with the Everafters in Manhattan. I was considered an asset to the people of Faerie and to the late King Oberon, who turned to me for counsel. I can be of help to you as well."
"Can you bring down the barrier?"
Chicken Little squawked from the front of the crowd. Veronica shook her head. The audience booed loudly. A few bottles were flung at the stage and shattered at Veronica's feet. Pieces flew at Morgan, but Mr. Seven swatted them away. Mordred's hands glowed green, and several people in the front of the crowd cried out in fear, so Henry begged him to stop. Mordred reluctantly did what he was asked.
"Don't worry, Grimm. When the crowd gets ugly, I'll be here to save your butt," Puck said to Sabrina.
"Like always."
"What's the matter with you? You've been a crybaby for days," Sabrina snapped.
"I'm just bored with saving your life. If you think I'm going to do this after we get married, you can forget it."
"First, we are not getting married, ever. Second, if you're so put out, feel free to stop. I don't need your help."
"Yes, you do."
"No, I don't.
Trust me, you do. Trust me, I'm fine. Find something else to do with your precious time. That nose of yours isn't going to pick itself. I would love nothing more than to give my nose the attention it deserves. But if I did, you'd be dead within minutes,
Puck said. His head suddenly morphed into that of a lion, and he roared angrily. Sabrina roared back, though it lacked the ferocity. It sounded ridiculous. But what was worse was the realization that the entire crowd was watching her and Puck. She had never been so embarrassed. Puck had an almost magical ability to get her to make a fool of herself. He could always find something that she was sensitive about, sometimes something she didn't even know bothered her, and then poke at it until it made her crazy.
Ahem,
Veronica said, then turned her attention back to the crowd.
We have come here with an invitation. Join our cause.
There was a moment of silence, and then an uproarious laugh so loud it hurt Sabrina's ears. Veronica waited patiently until they calmed.
We know there are those among you who have been pressured through violence or threats to join the hand. We know that you aren't sure where you can turn. We have a place where you can be safe. You don't have to live in fear any longer.
More bottles came crashing onto the little stage until Mordred had to step forward and cast a shield to protect the group.
The master has turned his back on you,
Veronica shouted over the bedlam.
Who are you to question the master?
Hart barked into her megaphone.
Because he is a liar,
a voice said, and the crowd grew deathly quiet. Sabrina turned and saw her Uncle Jake climbing the steps to the gazebo. She looked to her father for an explanation, but he seemed just as confused.
Watch your tongue, Grim, or my blade will remove it, Nottingham raged.
2 years ago, your savior kidnapped my brother and his wife, then cast a sleeping spell on them. Veronica was pregnant, and while they slept, a baby grew inside her. Once that baby was born, the master stole him for a sick and perverted purpose. He wanted to put his spirit inside the child. Now, why would he do that?
If you must know, he wanted to escape the barrier in the body of a human being,
Hart snapped. Jake smiled sympathetically.
How would that help you?
Hart stammered as if the question had never crossed her mind.
Once he was on the other side, he could find a way to lower this magical cage your family built,
Nottingham howled.
Once he's on the other side? Nottingham, you're a smart man. How could he turn it off from the outside?
Jake said to the crowd.
There's no magic button on the other side. If he can't lower it on this side, he can't lower it on the other. He was playing you all for fools. He's not going to set you free. He's going to betray you the same way he did my family.
He told me himself he had no plans of freeing you, Sabrina said. You would be too much competition for power.
You lie, Nottingham growled. The master will free us all, and together we will wipe out your foul, inferior race. This world will belong to ever-afters, as it was intended.
I know you don't all believe that, Jake said, scanning the crowd. I can see it in your faces. You know that what is happening here is wrong, but you're too afraid to stand up to this mob.
You can stop. I am extending the olive branch myself. Join us.
Sabrina was flabbergasted. What happened to her uncle's broken heart and anger? Where was his hostility and promises of revenge? Even Hart was speechless.
Nottingham took the opportunity to speak.
Don't listen to this liar. He wants to keep us in this cage like dogs. We can't know the master's plan, but he deserves our loyalty for opening our eyes to the truth.
For too long, our destiny has not been our own. And there is no one to blame but this family, who now stands here begging us not to kill them. They know they cannot beat us this time, so they come arrogantly waving the white flag for truce. Well, they should be waving it in surrender.
The master said he was all-powerful, the white rabbit cried. He said if we helped him with his plans, he would free us. But we are still trapped here.
Nottingham seethed.
Then perhaps he needs some more help. The spell that keeps us here says that when the last Grimm dies, the barrier falls. If we kill them now, we'll be free.
The crowd grew louder and more excited.
Except that killing us won't get you what you want at all, you moron, Jake said. The master is inside my mother's body. He thought he could just walk out of town, but it hasn't happened. He can't escape any more than you can. In fact, he's making it worse on you, because now he's a Grimm, too. Even if you were to kill everyone in my family, there would still be one Grimm alive. And who here is going to kill your all-powerful savior?
The crowd grew silent.
Now you're getting it, Jake continued. The master can't get his freedom, and he can't give it to you either. There's only one person in the world who will give you your freedom. Me.
You?
The frog prince cried.
15 years ago, I tried to do my brother a favor by letting his then-girlfriend out of this town. I snuck into Baba Yaga's house, found Wilhelm's spell in one of her books, and stole it. Then I turned the magic off long enough for her to leave.
It's true,
Goldilocks said, as she stepped forward.
He let me out. I lived outside of the town for 15 years before I came back to help save Henry and his wife.
Jake reached into his pants pocket and took out a well-worn piece of paper. He unfolded it gently and held it up so everyone could see it.
Turn your back on the master. Help us save my mother, and I will free you. This is the spell to lower the barrier.
Jake, what are you doing? Mr. Canis said. You'll ruin everything.
What do you mean?
Sabrina asked the old man, but he brushed her off in frustration. Nottingham took the megaphone and was ready to hurl more insults, but Hart snatched it back.
Sheriff, let him talk, the queen said.
Sabrina looked out on the crowd. The angry faces were fading. People were considering Jake's offer.
We will join you, said voices from below.
The three blind mice pushed forward, their canes clicking on the ground as they walked. As they climbed the stairs, a number of threats were hurled at them.
Traitors! You will pay for betraying the master.
You have signed your own death warrants.
Wonderful, Veronica cried, ignoring their anger.
Who else? Can you protect me?
A lion said, though he was bigger than any lion Sabrina had ever seen in the Bronx Zoo. This one was as tall as a horse and wore a shiny gold medal with the word courage around his neck.
Absolutely,
Sabrina sputtered before the gigantic beast.
Then I'll come with you.
The lion replied, as he leaped onto the stage.
Good to have you, old friend, the scarecrow said.
Sabrina shook her head in disbelief. Had her father been right? Would the Everafters do the right thing if presented with the opportunity?
Please, James,
Beauty said to her husband, who stood defiantly within the crowd with his overgrown daughter Natalie at his side.
Bring our daughter and come up here and join us.
Beast shook his head, and Natalie looked at her mother with disgust. Poor Beauty's face fell. Several goblins and a troll pushed through the crowd on their way to the stage before Nottingham stopped them.
You fools! This is the Grimm family, Nottingham said. They can't be trusted.
For a moment, Mayor Hart looked as if she was ready to take Jake's extended hand, but Nottingham pushed past her. He had his dagger in hand and murder in his eyes.
I'll put a stop to these lies for good.
Charming pulled his own sword and waved it in Nottingham's face. The sheriff stumbled backward, fearful of the prince's deadly blade.
"My quarrel is with them," Nottingham shouted.
"Then your quarrel is with all of us," Charming said. "This man extends his hand in peace, and you move to slice it open? You disgust me."
"I will kill you, Charming," Nottingham seethed.
"Is there courage in those words, Sheriff? Perhaps you should prove it."
"If it's courage you seek, little brother, I have it in spades," said a strange, deep voice.
"Who said that?" Charming asked,
scanning the crowd. Sabrina did the same and spotted the mane of greasy red hair moving through the mob.
"Atticus," Sabrina gasped.
She turned to Bunny, who stepped in front of her daughter. Mr. Seven joined her.
"Don't you remember me, brother?" Atticus cried. "You destroyed my family and stole my rightful seat at our father's side. But your most wicked of crimes was stealing my wife while I have been away."
"I am not your brother, and I have never stolen any woman," Charming said.
Atticus leaped onto the gazebo. He stared at Charming for a long time, his face contorted with amused hatred. For the first time, Sabrina could see the resemblance between the two men. They had the same eyes and jawlines. Their cheekbones were identical, as were their lips. But while all of Charming's features combined to make him handsome, Atticus's features were twisted and rough, making a person want to look away in disgust. Charming stared back, mouth agape, at the strange man. Atticus reached for his sword, but then seemed to think better of it. Instead, he turned to the crowd.
"The master has sent me with a message, people. He is disappointed in you, and wants you to know that being here, speaking to your jailers, is treachery. Turn away from the Grimms, or blood will spill."
"Who in the blue blazes are you?" Charming asked.
"Who am I?" Atticus said, then snatched Snow White by the wrist and pulled her close to him. "Surely you remember me, my dearest. Surely you remember your husband?"
"Let go of me," she said. "You've lost your mind."
Charming grabbed Atticus's hand and pulled it away from his love.
"Don't touch her."
Atticus laughed. Then, with a burst of ferocity, he slugged Charming in the nose. The prince fell backward, blood spraying across his face. Atticus drew his long silver sword and hovered over the fallen man, looking to attack. But Snow stepped between the two men.
"You've made a mistake. This man is not your brother," she said.
But Atticus slapped her, and she fell to the ground next to Charming.
"You filthy harlot," he bellowed at her. "You do not argue with me. You are my property."
"That's enough," Mr. Seven said.
"No, it's not enough. Not enough at all," Atticus said.
And with all the effort one might make to cut a pat of butter for some toast, he stabbed Mr. Seven in the belly. The sword slid through him and out his back. Then, with an irritated jerk, Atticus pulled his weapon free.
"No!"
Morgan Le Fay cried. As Mr. Seven fell to the ground, she raised her hands above her head. A ball of vicious red energy formed in between them.
"Morgan, no! Save the magic for Seven! Get him out of here!" Henry barked, taking control.
He raced forward and clocked Atticus in the face. The villain staggered, but only temporarily. His sword was in the air, sailing toward Henry's head, when a blast of white energy slammed into Atticus. Sabrina turned to find the source.
"I told you once I would kill you if you touched my daughter again," the Wicked Queen said.
Her hands were growing red with ancient arcana. She loosed the power on Atticus, and it sent him flying through the crowd, knocking people aside as if he were a runaway truck. Sabrina rushed to Morgan's side. The poor woman hovered over her husband, sobbing. Sabrina forced Morgan to look into her face.
"Find Nurse Spratt."
Morgan looked bewildered.
"Nurse Spratt can help him," Sabrina said.
Morgan nodded and went to find the nurse. Goldie and the three bears rushed forward.
What should we do?
Crowd control, Sabrina said. Find Beauty and try to calm down this mob before anyone else gets hurt.
Goldie crawled onto Papa Bear's back, and they charged into the madness.
Park! Sabrina cried. Get Canis and the rest of my family to safety.
Fine, but just so you know, you're not the boss of me.
What should we do? A voice said. Sabrina turned and found the Frog Prince, his wife, and their daughter Bella, all members of the Scarlet Hand and bitter enemies of the Grimms. At first, Sabrina stumbled back, but then realized they were sincere.
You're joining us?
Sabrina asked. The Frog Prince nodded.
If you'll have us.
Fine. Help anyone who is in danger of being trampled by this crowd.
Bella and her father sprang into the air and leaped around the crowd, hoisting people off their feet and planting them safely on the outskirts of the melee. Sabrina had no idea that a person could jump so high, but she reminded herself that father and daughter were part amphibian. Now she knew why Charming put them on his wish list. When she turned to see if there was anyone else in need of help, she saw Nottingham hovering over her with his twisted knife and even more twisted smile. Mayor Hart stood by his side, watching the action with bright eyes.
One Grim down, six to go, he hissed as he thrust the blade at Sabrina.
Not today, you psycho,
Uncle Jake said, punching the villain in the belly and then kneeing him in the face. Nottingham fell over, gasping for air. His dagger slipped from his grasp and Uncle Jake snatched it up. He stood over the struggling villain, his hand squeezing the dagger's handle until his knuckles were white. For a moment, the dark, tragic expression he had worn for many days returned. Sabrina was sure he was going to kill Nottingham. Then, with a flick of his hand, he threw the blade to the ground.
The offer still stands, Miss Hart, he said, extending his hand to the former queen. The master is no friend of yours. I'm not asking you to do the right thing. Just do the right thing for you.
Hart eyed him with curiosity, but did not take his hand. Instead, she snapped up her megaphone and dashed back into the mob. An explosion shook the gazebo, nearly knocking everyone to the ground. The Wicked Queen's battle with Atticus had escalated. Bunny blasted him repeatedly, and he slammed into the mob like he had been fired from a cannon. He flew past Sabrina and smashed into the gazebo behind her, tilting it off its foundation. But within moments he was on his feet, chuckling as if he were being attacked by a child.
Bad news, Your Majesty. That book of fairy tales you tried to bury me in was full of magical weapons. I managed to acquire a few in the last 400 years. Take this suit of armor I wear, enchanted by Merlin himself. As long as I wear it, no human can kill me. Now, put away your card tricks. The master has need of me, and I'd like to kill my traitorous brother while I have some free time.
The Wicked Queen floated over the crowd. The whites of her eyes were swallowed by blackness, and tiny bolts of lightning buzzed around her body.
Card tricks! You don't get a name like the Wicked Queen doing card tricks!
She blasted him with a green rocket that sent him slamming into the ground once more. Still, Atticus recovered quickly.
Woman, he said. If you could kill me, you would have done it long ago, instead of locking me in that book.
Mother, what is he talking about?
Snow asked.
Not now, honey. The grown-ups are talking, Bunny said.
The queen stretched out her arms. She shouted,
Gladius!
And a flaming sword appeared in her hands. She struck at Atticus. He smirked and then launched into a savage and unrestrained attack. He slashed with his blade, forcing the floating witch farther and farther back. Bunny retaliated, her sword clanging against Atticus's blade. Each strike sent red-hot sparks flying in all directions.
I need a sword, Charming said. His own was lost in the fighting.
Coming right up,
Daphne said, and slipped her hand into her pocket. She took out the fairy godmother wand once more, and with a flick of her wrist, Charming was in a full suit of armor with a sword in hand.
"I don't need the armor," Charming groused, pulling off the helmet and tossing it aside.
"Sorry, it goes with the outfit," Daphne said.
Charming charged into the fight, slashing at Atticus.
"So the baby brother dares to pick up his sword," Atticus said. "How you can defend your actions is beyond belief. The arrogance."
Swords flew. One flashed past Sabrina's head, and she felt it slice off a chunk of her hair. A second later, she and Daphne were whisked into the sky. Puck had saved their lives again.
"I rest my case," Puck said.
"Fine. I sometimes need your help," Sabrina said.
"Sometimes?"
"Don't push it, Bugface," Sabrina said. "There's my mom and dad. Put us down there."
Once they were on the ground, Henry and Veronica pulled them into their arms. Veronica's face was wet with tears, and seeing her daughter sent a fresh flood down her cheeks.
"Let's get out of here now, kids."
"But what about Charming and Ms. Lancaster?" Sabrina said, turning back to watch more of the brutal fighting.
"They can handle themselves," Henry said. Goldilocks rushed to the family.
"Come quick. It's Mr. Seven."
Henry, Veronica, Sabrina, and Daphne followed the woman through the mob. A crowd was gathered in an alley near the old bicycle shop. Mr. Seven lay in the center, Nurse Spratt hovering over him. He looked pale and tired. A bandage was wrapped around his belly, but a red stain was spreading through it. Morgan Le Fay sat on the ground next to him, holding his hand. Seven leaned up with some pain and kissed his wife.
"I love you, Morgan."
The witch held onto his hand and would not let go.
"I love you, too, but everything is going to be fine. We'll just postpone the honeymoon."
"Tell Mordred I want him to look after you," he said.
"You're going to look after me, darling. That's your job," she said.
Sabrina couldn't stop staring at the blood. There was so much.
"I tried everything I can," Nurse Spratt said. "Nothing is helping."
Snow White rounded the corner. The beautiful teacher knelt beside Seven.
"Take care of Charming, Snow," the little man said. "He needs you."
"I will,"
Snow said through tears. The Queen and Charming joined the group moments later, exhausted from their fight. Snow jumped to her feet and wrapped her arms around her boyfriend.
"We managed to fight him off," Bonnie said, "but he'll be back. We should get our friend here back to your castle."
Nurse Spratt shook her head. Charming stepped forward and knelt down next to his companion.
"Nonsense. If you think dying gives you an excuse to tell me what you really think of me, you can save it, Seven. You're going to recover, and it will be very awkward later."
"William Charming, you are my friend," the little man said.
Charming's face turned red. He fought back tears with as much force as he must have used to fight back dragons.
"It has been my pleasure to look after you," Seven continued.
"Is that what you've been doing?"
Charming said, with a chuckle. Sabrina watched Seven lock eyes with the Queen.
"I've done everything I could to protect him from the truth, Your Majesty," Mr. Seven said. "But it seems it has come nonetheless."
"What are you talking about?" the Prince said.
The Queen sighed and leaned over Mr. Seven.
"You have done your job well. You were the right choice,"
the Queen said.
"I appreciate your saying so, Bunny," Seven said,
then looked at his wife.
"You are the most beautiful thing I have ever seen, Morgan, and I have been alive a long, long time. I'll be waiting for you."
And for the last time in his life, A grin spread across his face. And then he was gone. Those gathered wept for their friend. Morgan shrieked, and Mordred did his best to comfort her. Charming took his friend's hand and quietly prayed. And Sabrina and Daphne cried until there were no more tears to spare. When Snow could finally speak, she stepped over to her mother and seized her hand.
"You are going to tell me the truth."
The queen nodded.
"Yes, I am."